I'm Cheryl Corley, sitting in for Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for a trip to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. And no doubt there's much on their minds with the 40th anniversary of the death of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer and reporter Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and Tom T.J. Lydon, a racial tolerance consultant. Gentlemen, welcome.
How are we doing?
Hey, what's happening, Jay?
I'm good, man.
What's up?
Well, check this out. You know, sadly, all week long, people have been commemorating the 40th anniversary of the assassination of the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. He was shot on April 4th, 1968 in Memphis, Tennessee, where he was scheduled to speak in support of striking sanitation workers. Looking back, TJ, have we realized Dr. King's dream yet?
I don't think so. I mean, we've made a lot of strides. I mean, if you just look at the presidential election this year, we've had black gentlemen running, we have a female running, we had a Mormon running. So, I mean, we're getting closer, but we still got miles to go.
What do you say, Ruben?
I say, yeah, miles to go. It's interesting, though. You know, even our recollection of Dr. King is a little skewed. A lot of folks sort of tune in to King around the Montgomery bus boycott, which started with Rosa Parks not giving up her seat in 1959. And then, you know, they catch up with I Have a Dream in 1963. And if you ever listen to particularly white folks talk about Martin Luther King, they always sort of center on that one line about how, you know, let's judge people by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. But then Nobody thinks about what happened for the next 5 years up until 1968 in the Memphis speech. There was a real radicalization of Dr. King during those years because of the Vietnam War and because of 1967, 68. And so it's kind of interesting, you know. I mean, we got into this with the Reverend Wright controversy. A lot of folks said, you know, gee, I sort of wish, you know, Dr. King was around because that was different. I don't think so. I think the recollection is skewed somehow. We forget that Dr. King, at the end of his life, was talking about this being a violent country and about war and about all that stuff. And it's funny how, in the scope of history, we remember things differently.
The art makes a great point, A-Train. You know, I think we're more invested nowadays in the mythology of Dr. King and not so much in the reality of Dr. King. What do you say to that?
Well, for me, at least, as a civil rights lawyer, I think, in my personal opinion, Dr. Martin Luther King was the most important American ever to walk this land in the 20th century. If you look at the Civil Rights Act of 1964, Brown v. Board, you know, the apex of the civil rights movement and what we see today as constitutional rights for all Americans, regardless of their race, religion, or socioeconomic status, I don't think that anyone had a more resonating impact and a more historical impact. I mean, Dr. Martin Luther King will live forever in American and world history. And, you know, the little nuances here and there aside, I think that if Dr. Martin Luther King were still alive today, America would be much closer to realizing that dream than, unfortunately, we are today.
Can I jump in just for a second? Because, you know,
Love, go ahead.
You know, there are several groups that deal with race all around the country. We have fair housing groups, human rights commissions, those sorts of things. But do you guys think that that's really a contained conversation and it's only when issues like Jeremiah Wright pop up that it becomes a national discussion and then kind of fades back into the background?
For my part, I think it only comes, you know, it only gets on the plate when there's a hot topic. Otherwise, you know, it's played to the back. You want to check in on that?
Yeah, I think it does sort of erupt now and then. And then these groups that sort of deal with this every single day, even they may not be the proper mechanism for getting at this stuff. I love the grassroots organizations that tend to be sort of smaller. They work directly with the folks. But when you start getting up the ladder to the NAACP or the National Council of La Raza, I'm sorry, those are big corporations at this point. They're people who live off corporate donors and who oftentimes can't take controversial positions for fear of losing, you know, those checks from corporations. And so it's gotten a little muddy there. I think when in doubt, sort of look at the grassroots level organizations who are doing the real work.
Well, you don't think the big guys are doing anything?
That really takes us right over to TJ. TJ, tell me. I mean, tell us all about how that affects your work.
I agree. When you get into big groups, they lose track. They're afraid of, you know, if they say the wrong word, that their sponsorship's going to get dropped. I don't care. You know, I'll tell you like it is. And if you don't like it, you know, there's the door. Don't let it hit you and, you know, where your mom split you. And that's just the way, you know.
Well,
I mean, that's the way it's got to be. I mean, everybody was talking about, you know, the Reverend Wright a while back. And then, you know what? And I love Obama when he was sitting there talking about the fact that, you know, his grandmother had, you know, was racist. And she said racist things. Both my grandfathers said racist things. My, you know, my dad said things off and on. You know, you don't get rid of family members because they say things like that. You try to educate them. And that's what he's maybe been trying to do with his grandmother, telling her, look, you know, grandma, I'm half black, I'm half white. And what's he supposed to do, just leave the pastor? Every one of us probably has somebody in our church, our synagogue, or a mosque that says something derogatory or racist now and then. So do we stop trying to educate them and be their friend?
You know, my grandfather used to say, my grandfather, let me just say this. I might get in trouble saying this again, but, you know, I find the older black people, because they've been through so much, are among the most intolerant people I know. And my grandfather used to say if he had a gun, he started shooting black people and white people, you know, which I thought was insane. But also say, you know what, you could probably run for office on that platform. Well, A-Train.
And also,
check in.
You know, talking about the grassroots versus the national organizations, most people don't remember that for Brown v. the Board of Education, Thurgood Marshall was a volunteer lawyer at the time for the NAACP Legal Defense
Fund.
That's
true.
They were not the national juggernaut that they are today. And, you know, all of these national movements, whether it's La Raza or NAACP, they all started from the grassroots local community levels. And I think that it only is a testament to the political empowerment of minorities in America that these organizations have become the juggernauts, you know, similar to the NRA and the AARPs out there.
Pivoting back just for a moment to talk about the assassination of Dr. King, you know, in 1997, Dexter met with James Earl Ray and came out of that meeting with the idea that there had been some conspiracy by the government to assassinate Dr. King. I don't know. Respect to Dexter. Anybody else buying that? A-Train, let's start on your side of the fence.
Well, I mean, you know, if you look at any major assassination, I mean, the Kennedy assassination is the perfect example. I mean, there's always going to be conspiracy theorists out there, you know, who, you know, want to, you know, nitpick at every single discrepancy. I think, you know, it doesn't really matter who killed him. The fact is that he unfortunately was killed. And I think I think that's very important. We have to, you know, when a person leaves this earth, we have to understand, okay, what is this legacy now? What are we going to learn from his life and not, you know, bicker over, you know, who may have pulled the trigger?
Well, I don't know, Jimmy, I got to get back at you with that one because I think if the government had anything to do with that, I think it matters. TJ, you want some of this?
I don't know.
everybody's saying
treading
lightly on this one.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know if there was a conspiracy or not, but I totally agree. It doesn't matter. I mean, to me, to clear the air on all these things from the Kennedy assassination to the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, only thing that scares me is that our government won't release all the documents at one time.
That's true.
Release them. Let the public feel what they can feel. You're going to get people on both sides that are going to say, oh, okay, we got all the evidence. It was a conspiracy. You're going to have all the other people that are going to say it's not. Just like it was September 11th.
Right.
You got people that are still sitting there saying that there was dynamite in the building.
If those papers were released, the documents that aren't supposed to be released for another 20 years or so, that it might solve some of this.
I think it could solve some of it. But I think at the same token, you know, I'm at the same point. Who cares? The fact is that his legacy is. And what we're trying to get his dream to be. And I tell my boys all the time, you know, because sometimes they'll say, you know, oh, I have this friend at school, you know, da-da. I go, he's not a friend. He's an acquaintance. You never brought him into our home. We've never had bread with him. Mm. And when you bring him to our house, then and we're eating with him, and he comes into your door, into your domicile, your casa, then he's a friend because you're willing to bring him around your family and other people. And I think that's what everybody needs to do.
We're talking about the assassination of Dr. King. I'll tell you what, if there was a conspiracy back then, 1968, to try to take out an African-American leader and somehow, you know, humble African-Americans as a whole, I think we ought to be asking the tough question, you know, where were the Clintons? That's what I want to know. I mean, clearly, in the context of the current debate, they're the ones with dirty hands about that.
Well,
and by the way, if Dexter, in fact, had that meeting with James Earl Ray, Don't forget, he probably stuck a copyright on that thing. So, Jimmy, you owe him a dollar for even mentioning that right now.
Don't forget that. Ooh, that's dirty because the R is actually making an allusion to the fact that the King family sold much of Dr. King's.
They have been very, very protective copyright wise on the I Have a Dream speech and various other things. And you hear like the cha-ching in the background, unfortunately, with this family attempting to profit infinitum on this legacy.
They sold, I believe, what were the last of his papers last year amidst a lot of head scratching and whatever. But hey, I mean, everybody's got to make a living, right?
I was just going to say that, I wanted to switch it just a little bit because, we've been talking about how race has been a part of all of this electoral process this time around.
Right.
It's, of course, a very serious issue, and we've had serious moments, of course, throughout the campaign, as you would expect. The Democrats, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, of course, in this very tight contest, and they are mm-hmm. trying to craft the exactly right strategy so they can win the nomination. And this week, Hillary Clinton announced her latest plan to reporters this week, and this is what she had to say.
This has been a very hard-fought race. We clearly need to do something so that our party and the people to make the right decision. Today, I am challenging Senator Obama to a bowl-off, a bowling night, right here in Pennsylvania. Winner take all. It's time for his campaign to get out of the gutter.
All right,
man,
so did you guys think it was funny?
Listen.
No, she shouldn't quit
no,
a day job.
Hold on.
You know, and it's so funny because, you know, she's trying to add levity to this race, and she's vowing to go all the way in this race for the Democratic nomination, even amidst calls from politicos of all stripes for her to bow out gracefully.
Well, you know,
even as Obama takes gains on her in Pennsylvania. Yo, A-Train, well, she's in a world of her own, isn't she?
She absolutely is, and I would make a counteroffer to Senator Clinton. I think that Barack and her should play a game of one-on-one where Barack would tie one hand behind his back and it would still be LeBron James versus Steve Urkel. I think that, this was just a little cheap April Fool's
don't
podcast.
Forget
oh, well,
don't,
now
do
you're
not,
an
do
Obama
not.
Supporter, we must,
don't,
for the record.
Right,
yeah, for the record.
We do have to mention that. Go ahead, R.
Don't forget this.
All right.
Don't forget this other thing. You know, about 10, 14 days ago, thereabouts, you know, Bill Richardson endorsed Barack Obama.
Right,
it was a
right.
big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And there was these stories
mm-hmm.
about it. But the latest eruption on that front is now it's starting to leak out details of the phone call that took place between Bill Richardson
right.
and Hillary Clinton when Bill Richardson informed Hillary Clinton that he was about to endorse Obama, right? This is now being reported in the New York Post and elsewhere. And it is blunt, man. It is blunt. I mean, as you can well imagine.
You're right.
Hillary Clinton, according to some of these sources, is reported to have said to Bill Richardson, Bill, he can't win.
Mm-hmm.
Obama can't win if he's the nominee. He won't be able to win in November. And so I think this is, again, more disrespect from the Clinton campaign.
Well, wouldn't any candidate
two...
say something
well,
like that?
It's,
I mean,
it's
not
a
if
no.
you're the
number
candidate
two person. No,
like
not
that?
If you're... Not if you're the number two person saying that about the number one person.
Well, and
this
shows,
person who's
yeah.
gotten more delegates, more votes than you, who has out-fundraised you 2-1, suddenly he's the one who's not electable, but you're electable? That's disrespectful.
That's
so what about
not
the,
to mention delusional.
What about the call then for Clinton to get out of the race? Should she or should she not?
The perfect analogy is to football. When the New England Patriots are able to clinch a playoff spot in week 9, like John McCain has, they're able to chill for the rest of the season while the rest of the teams duke it out and become really tired. And I think that, you know, the Democratic Party right now is on the verge of exhaustion. I mean, you know, you have two very compartmentalized camps within the Democratic Party, and it really does no good for our party, you know, the longer and more protracted this battle is.
I tell you what, I love this. We haven't seen politics like this
right.
in my generation.
I love this.
Ever.
Right.
And this is like WWE, like,
exactly.
like
right.
you know,
right.
And,
bring it on,
and like,
bring it on,
and like Academic Challenge,
Smackdown,
and Jeopardy, like all in the same boat, you know. And frankly, I'm just waiting for them to grease up and just start smacking each other, you know, UFC style. I'm totally on that.
Well, you know, Hillary Clinton had her moment of humor this week. And so a comedian also decided to take a Republican to task. David Letterman had something to say about John McCain, who has a clear field at this time. So here's David Letterman.
John McCain right now, he's looking for a vice presidential running mate, looking for a vice presidential candidate to be his running mate. And he needs a guy who is conservative. Understands the economy and knows how to operate a defibrillator. Those are the. And then.
Now, how was his joke?
Bubunch.
Not so
true.
Good. And I'll tell you why.
Yes,
I've liked the idea all along, dating back to Jack Kennedy. This idea of bringing in younger people, younger generations. Bill Clinton worked for me in '92 with this idea of a younger generation. However, in this case, look what's going on the Democratic side of the fence with these two kids in kindergarten throwing spitballs at each other. McCain actually looks like the grown-up, and I think that's going to continue to be the
case. Come on. Mr. Senator 100 years McCain, Senator bomb, Iran, McCain. I mean, come on. You want to talk about somebody who is completely of the dinosaur generation and completely out of touch with reality? You need look no further than the Senator McCain presidential campaign.
You know what, though, TJ, speaking of people looking further, you know, he's looking for a running mate. You know, I'm thinking he's sizing the Mormon, the one that wears the funny underwear.
We don't wear funny underwear.
Mitt Romney. You're Mormon.
I'm a Mormon.
I thought this is whole big thing about Mormons wearing funny underwear.
No, we wear the religious garments. The same thing.
Where
did you get this
from? No one else heard religion. That.
No, nobody else has heard that.
No, it's totally true.
Am I getting a CNN beamed into my head?
Oh, man, are you going to get the telephone calls going?
It's okay.
Okay, TJ. Of course you
know what I mean. No. I take no offense, but it's funny. The thing is, his best choice, if he wanted to pick a vice presidential running mate, being a conservative, first of all, I'll tell you this. If he picks Mitt Romney, it's good for the economy. But I really think he's going to probably pick somebody else. And I think it's stupid. I don't think John McCain should have been the nominee anyways. There's too many other good people out there. I mean, I'm probably going to end up voting for Barack Obama just because I want to see some change in this country. There's great guys in the Republican Party I would have rather seen become president of the United States. J.C. Watts is a good conservative guy out of Oklahoma, smart, economics. He's a younger guy. I agree. You know, we're going to put a guy in the White House that's freaking, you know, seriously, you're going to need somebody who knows how to use a defibrillator.
You know what? And with that, C-Love, I think it's something like a wrap. I want to go ahead and thank everybody for another great barbershop, and I'm going to pass it over to the lady of the house who's sitting in for the other lady of the house.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Cheryl Corley.
All right. Thank you. Freelance reporter Jimmy Israel writes for TheRoot.com. He joined us from WFSU in Tallahassee, Florida. Ruben Navarrete writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com. He joined us from KOGO in San Diego. Tom T.J. Lydon is a former white supremacist, now dedicated to promoting racial tolerance. He joined us from KNPR in Las Vegas. And Arsalan Iftikhar, contributing editor at Islamica magazine and a civil rights attorney. He joined us right here in our Washington studios. Thanks, everybody.
Peace.
Thank you.
Yep.